Welcome back to the Mind of Monty podcast. I'm sure you all missed us. It's your hosts, Monty G, and I'm Mo. And today we have another episode of the great podcast that you all listen to on a almost weekly basis. Today's show consists of us basically shitting on Valentine's Day. Then we're going to review New Beginning and talk about how we fared prediction-wise. This one was not up for punishment, but more of a practice run, so we'll get into that. Then we're going to talk about Battle in the Valley that's happening on Saturday the 18th. Also, predicting WWE Elimination Chamber, and this one is for the marbles. This is the one where you're going to get punished if you lose. And then we have another segment, a deep thoughts segment about, you know, some things that we kind of encountered over the past week that didn't sit right and has made us talk for long periods of time for no reason, just a ramble. And we have a new segment that we're going to introduce. It's called Either Or. So we'll see how that goes. We may take suggestions for the next segment. We shall see. But let's get into the podcast. How are you feeling today, Monty?
Normal. You know, again, back for another episode, like you said. Not really. I just want to point out, think about it, guys. Like, this is the most thought out this show has ever been. Like, how long has the rundown been that long?
It wasn't that long.
It ran the first 2 minutes of the show, pretty much. I just, you know, I was marveling in the amount of things that we have planned. So it was enough. Why the hell do I need to, you know, filibuster here about how I'm feeling? I'm good. You're good. We're ready to get this on the road. So let's do it. You know?
All right. So as everyone in the world, or at least America, knows, Valentine's Day is on February 14th every year. And I hate Valentine's Day.
Why do you hate Valentine's Day? Person who's been in a relationship for a decade.
First of all,
I just wanted to do that because I wanted to make sure everyone understood that if you're saying something bad about Valentine's Day, we're in the category of people who are actually happily in a relationship and don't like Valentine's Day. So, go ahead.
I don't like all of the displays of nothingness. Like, I feel like Valentine's Day is so useless because it's people. And again, it may be because I'm old and I've been in a relationship for 10 years. But I feel like you doing all of this stuff for somebody that you're not going to be with in 6 months most of the time. Like, people out here buying jewelry, people out here, like, first of all, flowers die.
Well, they don't know that, by the way. They don't know that the relationship is going to end.
But I know.
Even though it is some people. Now, if you're talking about the people who just literally decided to jump in a relationship in the winter because they know that this is, you know, this is gift giving, because I know that's a cycle.
The Christmas and Valentine's Day people.
Yeah, right around the fall, so they can have a few months of gifts. And then, you know, right after Valentine's Day, it's over.
Drop you like a hot potato. Or the people that drop you right before the gift-giving holidays because
they don't want to give you gifts.
Yes. So it's just obnoxious. It's just a very obnoxious holiday.
I can understand that. Another thing, too, about Valentine's Day is, like I said, I wanted to differentiate us because it's a category. Some people hate it because they're lonely. Some people hate it because of, like you said, the reasons you pointed out. I don't necessarily hate it. I'm just indifferent. I've always been indifferent. It's one of those holidays where I know that the primary goal is to get people to spend money on other people, but at the end of the day, the point is to spend money, whether it's on a card, whether it's on whatever gift you decide. Like, it's nothing special about that day that makes people more loving. It doesn't change your relationship around just because you had a good day that day because someone told you, "Ooh, it's Valentine's Day."
That's the day people get proposed to too.
That's true. That happens too. But you know what? I think it actually is more of a thing. I think it's a great way for kids to process their feelings in a way. And I think that might be the only way I can look at it. That's the most positive thing I can think about it. It's like people who are teenagers. Because I think back, my fond memories of it was, you know, back when we were younger and when it was actually an exciting prospect of, you know, it was definitely something to worry about. But, you know, when I was younger, I really, you know, and I just, our relationship too was weird because we kind of got together in that period. Like, we got together in January.
So, a month before Valentine's Day.
Right, a month before Valentine's Day. So I felt, you know, like I needed to do something. But, you know, we're, like you said, we're weird in a sense that I consider what we did a perfect Valentine's Day, which was just sit at home, eat a nice meal, relax, and, you know, do, you know, just and be together.
Yeah. Do things that we enjoy as a couple together. Be together.
And that's the point of it. So if you was able to enjoy it from that standpoint and do what you wanted to do with the people you care about, then that's what's important. But you're 100% right. The sales tactics, the overabundance of people pretending, because this is another thing, social media, it's time for everyone to put on a show for Valentine's Day. Yes. People who are not even in relationships or people who've been in relationships forever, you never see them post their spouse. But all of a sudden, now everyone has a damn photo shoot planned.
Or they rented out a hotel and there's flower petals everywhere. Not saying that there's nothing wrong with anything wrong with doing that.
Did you see the thing going viral? No. Of the woman who, she got this note and this big thing of money and it was like, I'm going to fly you out or whatever for this and all of that. But, like, it was wrote at the bottom, like, yours truly. No one on the internet believes that anyone wrote it, like, gave that to her. Like, she wrote it. It looked like she wrote it.
I mean.
It was talking about where she finna get flew out to this particular place. And I was like, that is hilarious. But she was bragging about, ooh, my man finna fly me out or whatever.
Oh, no.
No one believes it's real. It's so hilarious.
I have a lot of issues. First of all, I love plants. I want to be a gardener. I want to be a botanist, right? But you're not finna give me no dead flowers. Like, buy me a pot of flowers that I can grow and keep alive. I might kill them, but at least they didn't come already dead.
That's not for sale, though, during this.
I know. Y'all out here just killing flowers.
That's not the thing that people can just grab for $9.
Somebody grew them flowers.
Or whatever, $19.
Just give me the whole pot or the bush that these flowers came off of. Give me a clipping or something.
No, just go see it in the water like everyone else.
That's more value. And then some people are just stupid. Like the celebrity. It was some celebrity that spent $10,000 on some girl hair. And I'm like, y'all doing a lot for nothing. Like... That's stupid.
Well, that's all
I know. That's all type. That's everyday stupid.
Yeah, that's all type. All type. But that happened every other day. Like someone buying stuff. And I think what they said, I think it was Rod Wave, who they claimed did it. Not trying to say I don't know anything, so Rod didn't do it. I'm sorry, but they were trying to make a point, and that's like such a great point. If you got to pay that much for someone's house on a holiday, not saying you have to, but it's like someone who care about you wouldn't accept it.
Yes.
And I'm not trying to say, I know everyone probably, all these people, a big chunk of people out here is going to have a comeback like, oh man, you just ain't got no money. If you broke, say it then. Whatever. Yeah. If you broke, say that then. It's just like, I'm a pop. No. I don't care how rich I am. If I had all the money in the world, I'm not paying $10,000 to get someone out there.
Like, that's just not.
Like, that's just not what, I don't move like that. $10,000 for what?
That's just not for practical what? Either. Like, that's just not practical. Like, somebody getting swindled. That hairstylist, that better be the hair that you shaved off your head yourself for me to be paying $10,000.
Special hair. But yeah, we can get off this.
Lump sum summary. Valentine's Day for us is not really all of that important. I also despise the color pink, so it's a little bit of hatred.
If you spread love every day, Valentine's Day ain't nothing but another day.
That's fair. That's
simple as that.
Moving on, we're going to do a review of New Beginning in Osaka. Basically, just go through and tell you how the matches went. So we're gonna skip a couple matches just to let you know. We were right. Young Lion did lose, obviously. Taguchi and crew lost to LIJ.
Yep, like we mentioned. Also, after that, before you move on, Leo, in a video package, basically challenged Hiromu to a title match for the Junior Heavyweight Championship. Said he wants to avenge his partner, Yo. Basically, pretty much said if you're seeing that video package, that means Yo was unsuccessful. So it sounded like Leo was betting on Yo not winning.
He had two video packages made.
Sound like, oh sure.
He said, if you watching this video, Yo, then you were successful.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna see you next. You know we gotta get this. He had one in the tuck.
Nah, he just assumed he knew Yo was gonna lose. Yo should whoop his ass. Bro. Anyway, no, Yo, by the way, Yo and Hiromu, absolute beast of a match. So I know Leo and Hiromu is going to kill it. That's an interesting matchup of clash of styles that I've never really got a chance to see them fight long term against each other, especially since Leo was just in tag league and Hiromu wasn't in it. So this is going to be a nice, unique matchup, you know, for the junior belts whenever they decide to schedule it. So I'm looking forward to that.
I agree. Next up, we will never root for Master Wato again. He lost to Taiji Ishimori to a bloody cross in 11 minutes. That's all I have to say. I'm never rooting for Wato.
And with Leo's contention, where does that leave Taiji going forward? He was never, you know, he was not, he lost his title in a multi-man match. So Hiromu is going to have to cross that bridge again at some point.
Soon, sometime soon. Kenta, oh, this is an important match because I won. Kenta lost to Tanahashi with a high fly flow, leading me to win my predictions against Monty.
I mean, you could. Wow, you spoiled. You're so anticlimactic. Wait until the actual.
That's no. This is the important one. Anyway, this and it was only this match that we actually differed. No, I'm lying. No, I'm not lying. It was this match that we really differed on from the last show. So, like, as far as predictions go, this would have been the one that cinched it. We kind of have a similar brain with how most of these shows are going to go.
No, you just copy me. But honestly.
Wow.
Honestly, though, Tanahashi winning here is all. Like I said, it's hard to bet against Tanahashi in these situations. The only reason why I did is because I thought with Jay White leaving Japan, be a good, great time for Kenta to step up. But if I knew Kenta was also going to be doing things for Battle in the Valley, which makes sense. He's been working with Strong anyway. But if I knew what was going to happen later, which we're about to get into, I probably would have definitely had foresight to see Tanahashi there in that spot. But it's fine. You know, it's no big deal. Kenta and Tanahashi, or even Tanahashi is like, you know, at this point, if this was a shonen manga, him and Kenta would already be friends by now. That's just how much they fought. Like, he's saying at this point, we're done with this. Like, you know, it's not necessarily you can't beat me, but it's just like we fought it out many different stipulations, different times. At this, you know, we might as well join up at this point.
Yes.
So we'll see. We probably won't see Kenta and Tanahashi fight each other much longer or again. Who knows? May see it again. Definitely in a cup or a G1. But either way it goes, Tanahashi seems to be past that. And Kenta seems to still be messing around with the cameraman.
Yes. And selling his book. You know, we got to get those sales up.
Next. Well, no, he's done. He's not promoting the book.
Oh, he did?
He's not,
I feel like,
overtly promoting the book anymore.
Oh, okay. I feel like he was still trying to promote it. But, all right. Then we had the Never Open Weight 6-Man Championship match with what are they called? Strong Style? Is it just Strong Style or is it Team Strong Style?
No, it's Strong Style.
Strong Style picking up the victory. Ren Narita, El Despi, and Minoru Suzuki.
Yeah, they didn't have that name before the match.
They did not. But now they have.
Who they are.
And they won over the former champions, Sho, Yujiro, and Evil.
Yes, House of Torture finally went down. And for all the people who've been waiting for them to finally drop those belts and finally take a L instead of being able to just screw everyone over, they didn't have a chance. To be honest, I watched this match and, you know, at times maybe Evil and Yujiro was trying to take, not Yujiro, Evil and Sho and all of them. They definitely tried their hand at taking the match as they always do. And I just want to say this was a crowd that was allowed to make noise in here in Osaka, and they hate the House of Torture. When I tell you they hate the House of Torture, they hate them. Like, you can just hear the moans and groans of frustration whenever the House of Torture did anything positive. And the happiness, the adulation when all three men from Strong Style locked in their submissions and made the House of Torture tap out. It was just beautiful, beautiful moment. That crowd was really into it. And congratulations to Strong Style. I love the name. You know, with Ren Narita being the son of Strong Style, we know the king of pro wrestling, a.k.a. the king. I guess I'm not going to say he's the king of Strong Style. We know who that is. But, you know, again, Suzuki with his background in Strong Style, like he even said himself after the match. I mean, who's better from Ren to Rita to learn from? By the way, he just sent so many unnecessary shots at Antonio Inoki. Suzuki is not going to pull any punches. Forgive. He does not like. Yeah, he's probably still don't seem to care too much about Inoki. But nonetheless, it was great to see them. El Desperado saying, you know, he wasn't really sure at first, but basically he'll follow Suzuki wherever he leads. And, you know, being loyal as Despy seems to always be. I'm excited for these. New combination, and I can't wait to see what they can do, not only as six-man champs, but just in general as, you know, a new force now that they have a name and all of that.
I agree, because this is going to give some very interesting six-man matchups in the future. Think about them and what's the name of them? Goto.
Who are you talking about? Bishamon?
Yes. And then Yano, or was it Ishii? Yeah, Bishamon and Ishii. Like, that would be a good matchup.
Yeah, I doubt they'll team up again because Bishamon got to defend the other belt, tag belts. But, yes, I see what you're saying. There's definitely some interesting combinations that's still there. You have, not only, of course, House of Torture is not going to leave it alone.
No.
You still have any other Hantai combination that you want to put together. Like you said, possible chaos combinations. And the Bullet Club, you know, right now they're in flux, so we're not sure what to expect from them. But you still have, you know, factions and many different combinations that possibly could be coming these belts.
And then since they have the AEW partnership, they could also end up with the Elite. It's all good things.
United Empire. So, yeah, it's just United Empire. A lot of people. We'll just
to look forward to. Next up, we had the Loser Leaves Japan match. Hikuleo versus Jay White, with Jay White losing to a choke slam. It was a good match at a solid 25 minutes long.
What match were you talking about?
Loser Leaves Japan.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I got an interesting little message, and it was about something completely unrelated, so it took me away from from Japan for a second there. But pun intended here. In this situation. Jay White, I mean, honestly, loser leaves Japan. Once we heard the stipulation, it was already, you know, especially with everything going, swirling through the, you know, airwaves, I guess, if you want to say that, but or the web, to be more on the nose. Jay White, like I said, it's rumored that he will be leaving New Japan. So it made a lot of sense for him to have, you know, this match in Osaka, a place that mean a lot to him, the place that he walked out as a young lion and basically guaranteed he would be back, and Osaka loved him then when he was a young lion. Then he became, I think he won his first championship. I don't know if it was in Osaka, but as a matter of fact, Jay White is undefeated in Osaka. So
was
undefeated in Osaka before this, coming into this match, basically. So, now that I think about it, you could have let me go off with it so I can tell you until now. But anyway, that's fine. You can do it that way. Awesome match with Hikuleo. He got pretty much Hikuleo's best performance, in my opinion. Particularly since coming to Japan, and Jay White did what he always did, you know, take care of the limbs, being very, very brutal. It seemed like he was going to take advantage of a leg injury from Leo, and again, a lot of shortcuts, but at the same time, just things that you come to expect and appreciate from Jay White. So it wasn't anything too bad or, you know, as overt as it's been with some of his screw jobs in the past. But it was still a really, really competitive contest. It was great to see Hikuleo have a moment to fire up and fight through all the adversity and then still be able to, you know, give Jay White a too sweet and then chokeslam him emphatically for the win. It was just a very, very strong showing for Hikuleo. He made Hikuleo look great on the way out. And then, again, Jay White also got a chance to say his goodbye, kind of, you know, not only to the fans. You can see with the respect that Osaka had for him and the love that he had. You know, he left with a smile on his face, even though, of course, it's a little crazy because Jay White don't really lose without kind of losing a couple of screws, literally. Mm-hmm. But it was still a lot of appreciation, even in his backstage comments and just somehow how much, you know, New Japan will always be his home and the fans of New Japan, that's his family. You know, I love the story of Hikuleo saying what's going to happen when you lose. You know, what are the Bullet Club going to be there? Like, if I lose, I have my family. What's going to happen when you lose? And then as you, at the end, when Jay White was sitting around backstage, he was just looking around, and he said Hikuleo was right. And that's when he said the New Japan fans were had become his family. So, again, it was a nice heartwarming moment. It was kind of hard to see that happen to someone who you watched develop like all the way from the Young Lion days, and then you see how great he has become to be a Grand Slam champion in New Japan, to not and not be Japanese, you know. So again, the stuff that Jay White has been able to do has been immaculate to me. He did it his own way. He's been that's the one thing a lot of people, he mentioned this in an interview post all of this, that a lot of people wanted to make him Kenny Omega, wanted him to act like Kenny Omega and all of that, and he was just like, if he did that, he would have failed. You know, he did it his own way. He was Jay White, and I think as someone just like me who's been watching, you can see the benefits of that, because now he's one of the most wanted in the world, you yes. know, and he for, did that off his own work.
Exactly. And for being the deranged, psychopathic, knife-wielding murderer he really is. Like, again, he went and...
Yeah, people forget he was way more methodical and when he was just the switchblade, when he had the
green tips.
Yeah, when he was the switchblade, he was like a little bit more unhinged, but smart, very very smart. You know,
and calculating, I think, like a serial killer.
Exactly, very serial killer. Like that's what the switchblade kind of reminds you of. And then he kind of got a little cooler, a little way more cockier as he got older and became champion. So. The evolution of Jay White was beautiful to witness in New Japan. I just can't wait to wherever he goes to see it continue.
I agree. Can't wait to see what he does next. We'll talk about that next, but again, can't wait to see what he does next. Then we had the Never Open Weight Championship match. We had Tama Tonga versus El Fantasma, with Tama picking up the victory with the J-Driller.
Yes.
I think I'm saying that right.
That's right.
All right, after about 27 minutes.
Yeah, he finished him with Jay Briscoe's move, even kind of did a little point to the sky, you know, so nice little shout-out, nice little love there, because the Gorillas of Destiny definitely have experience dealing with the Briscoes in the past. So, it was just a great, great little nod right there to, you know, to someone who was a well-respected colleague. And, you know, again, Tama Tonga, this is what I wanted. I wanted a real championship run, and putting him in there with somebody like El Fantasma, another great athlete, and someone who, in this match, he was not playing around. Not, you know, again, when El Fantasma wants to, he can go in there and he can just wrestle with the best. And he was actually very intense after this match, just talking about how Thomas said he wasn't really strong style. And apparently in this match, he's literally fighting with a messed up MCL or something like that. So, like ELP was saying, it was more strong style than that, you know, having a 20-plus minute
I'm gonna disagree, great match, you know, stupidity.
While being hurt. But, yeah, but, again, it's about the strong style is all about passion, all about, fighting spirit, and he's not wrong. What's more fighting spirit than that, having a great battle while injured like that? But, anyway, you know, like I said, to see Tama Tonga in this element, to hear the confidence after the match, because you could just see he's just on a whole nother level. Like he mentioned, WWE is knocking on his door. So he's either going to be a legend here or he's going to be a legend wherever else right now, because, you know, at the end of the day, his goal is to be a legend of New Japan or wherever he's going to be working at. But Tama is on, like I said, he got that look in his eye where he's trying to make this open weight title something special. This run special, and it was a great start. One of the best matches I've ever seen Tama had, honestly. You know, I don't know if it's Okada, him and Okada in the G1 a couple years ago, good, but it's definitely right up there. It was an awesome match, and I would love to see them do it again whenever ELP is healthy, depending on how they decide to schedule things out. So, yeah, man, shout out to those guys. It was an awesome contest, and the people were getting into it. Like, it was a great match.
All right. Last match of the night, we had Okada versus Shingo. And the I never call Kyle by his first name, but I realize I do everybody else the opposite. Anyway, weird point. Okada versus Shingo for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship match. Okada picking up the victory with a Rainmaker after about 32 minutes.
Yeah, man, I just suggest everyone go watch this, man. Once they got going, and again, Osaka really, really was into this. You could tell this is one of the first big, like, pay-per-view-like shows or cards where they've had, you know, full-fledged, no type of restrictions because to hear the chants, to hear the crowd all night. Even Okada noticed, you know, you had some people, you know, you have those few people who are always screaming Okada. But, man, Osaka was screaming Takagi, Takagi. Like, they really wanted Shingo to bring this home. And even Okada had to say after the match, even if you weren't cheering for me, it was awesome to hear feel your energy. So it was mixed, though. Now, I'm not trying to make it seem like they all wanted Shingo. Definitely plenty of people who also wanted Okada to win. You could just tell it was the ultimate respect for two world champions in this match. Like, the believability that Shingo could win is because we all respect what he can do and what he has done as a former IWGP world champion. And same thing with Okada. I mean, you can never really bet against him. So, again, it made the false finishes and it made everything that they did all the way up until the actual finish feel even more intense. And I would just recommend that people go seek this out from New Beginning in Osaka, February 11th. Please go watch Shingo Takagi versus Kazuchika Okada. It's one of the best matches of the year. As a matter of fact, people were already trying to say either next to Ospreay and Okada. I mean, Ospreay and Omega's match of the year. And that's my point. That's the type of run that New Japan is on right now, where we have at least 2 to 3 matches from New Japan that I've heard people say, nah, this is match of the year type stuff.
And we're just in
February.
Started.
Yeah, exactly. We're just in February. Some of these matches will be forgotten, but I would try my best. Matter of fact, I probably should jot some of this down as we speak, because I know by the end of the year we're gonna be talking about something else that happened, or maybe something happened at All Out or SummerSlam or something much later in the year that's more prevalent in our minds, and people may forget just how special Shingo and Okada was. And the same thing can be said for maybe Omega and Ospreay, because of the hype, maybe that would stick around. But again, I don't think Okada's match with Shingo could take a backseat to anything. It was incredible.
I agree. Especially when I was asleep at the time, y'all, but I had to like wake myself up out of my sleep because he was cheering so loud right next to me in the bed. So it had to have been a great match.
Oh, yeah, no. It brought, like, I was just like the crowd moaning and making noises when a big spot happened. Like, whoa, like for real. Like, it was just a lot going on that had me really into the match. So I was, like you said, fully invested.
Next up, we're going to talk about the New Japan Pro Wrestling's Battle in the Valley happening in Los Angeles. No, not Los Angeles.
San Jose,
California, on the 18th. So let's get started. The kickoff match is going to be Alex Kovlin versus J.R. Kratos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a guy who's been strong for a while. Big guy. I'm not going to try to predict it. I'm expecting a competitive match, probably a good match to lead off the show, but I can't tell you who I would think would win it at all. So,
all right. Yeah.
I don't know why you started with that one.
It was the first match. Dave Finley versus Bobby Fish. That sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got, that's a lot of people. Rocky Romero, Josh Alexander, Adrian Quest, Mascara Dorado versus Valador Jr., Kushida, Kevin Knight, and the DKC.
Yeah, so as you can see, a lot of LA Dojo there. We also got, I think he's still the Impact World Champion in Josh Alexander, but I could be wrong. I haven't been watching Impact. So, you know, you have so much wide assortment of just talent from all over the world in New Japan Strong. So that match should still be fun with everyone involved. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. Kevin Knight, DKC, you know, they young. So, because she's a team probably going to take this L, most likely, especially with Josh Alexander. But, hey, we'll have to see.
All right. Next up, we've got – What champion did you say he was? Fred Rosser versus Kenta, the strong open weight championship.
Yeah, open weight. Yeah, I think that's what it's called.
Yes, that's the match. It's his eighth defense against challenger. He's been doing Kenta.
Awesome. Fred has been awesome as champion. He's been completely revitalized his career. Honestly, if you look at his strong work, he's just won a lot of people over, me included. And fighting someone like Kenta is someone I'm not going to say he's been chasing this belt in particular for a while, but he's been chasing prominence and strong for a while, hell, since the pandemic, if we want to be honest about it. So Kenta's definitely a valuable opponent, and he possibly could take this belt off Fred here on this special night. So it's definitely something to be excited about, because you never really know what's going to happen. My money's on Fred, but we'll see.
We'll see. Then we've got the strong openweight tag team championship match. Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin, Motor City Machine Guns versus Jarrell Nelson and Royce Isaacs.
West Coast Wrecking Crew.
West Coast, that's a tongue twister.
Yeah.
West Coast Wrecking Crew.
So, I just want to say, every TNA Impact fan listening, I'm so sorry for what she just did. The fact that she just kind of needed confirmation on who the Motor City Machine Guns was, it kind of ripped out a piece of my heart too. But you know, I don't have allegiance to Impact, so it's like,
I told you, team names.
Come on,
team names are a bit difficult for me.
You have to know Alex Shelley.
Give me a little grace here.
And Chris Sabin.
Team names.
And then when they teamed up with Kushida, you know, I forgot they had a night. I think the time machine is awesome. I love it. Because, you know, Alex Shelley and Kushida time splitters. Anyway, besides that, I'm not betting against the Motor City Machine Guns, even though I probably should. We'll have to see what happens, man. Royce Isaacs is someone that I got a chance to see a little bit of when he came over to Japan. And I don't watch Strong often, so I don't know what's going on in their story. So we'll have to see how this all plays out. But I'm not betting against legends.
All right. Then we've got Eddie Kingston versus Jay White, a loser leaves New Japan match.
You know what? I said that, but I'm literally going to bet against the legends in a minute. But anyway.
Lord.
Besides that, he's fighting the legend, so it's fine. All right, so this match right here has changed a little bit. You know, like you mentioned, Jay White in his promo, even in his promo right after the match of leaving Japan, he kind of started to immediately go in on Eddie Kingston because this is his next New Japan scheduled date here, and he will be fighting in San Jose. And they've upped the ante, at least in the last few days, or at least since yesterday, since I heard that Jay White will and Eddie Kingston's match will now be loser leaves New Japan. So not just Japan. He's done. No more in the company. And I'm sorry, but who do you guys think is gonna lose this match?
Right. Like I think we're on the streets here. Definitely
yeah.
on the street.
Yeah, it'd be awesome though. A lot of people, some people don't really like after the great send off he had in Japan. They don't want to see him get a send off, via Eddie Kingston just randomly on Strong. And I guess I can understand that. But part of me is like, well, no, it's not so much as a shot at Eddie as it is a shot at the fact that he's already been we just did the send off. So what's you had this match just to do another send off? Like what's the? It's literally a week in between. From my point of view, I was thinking about him like, well, maybe this was something Jay White wanted to do. Maybe he enjoyed his time or really wanted to help someone out from Strong. But I also my book back is that maybe it don't have to be Eddie Kingston. It should have been a younger guy. You know, you gave the opportunity to kick Jay White out of. You know, again, make him look. Because, again, you helped out Hikuleo. You can help out a young guy in Strong. That's possible. That make more a little bit more sense. So part of me feel like maybe it was a we're in for a swerve. And it's not the guy we think that is obviously going to be. And they're going to just stop Eddie Kingston from fighting in New Japan randomly. Yeah.
What's the reason?
He's booked with, I think, DDT, or he has a booking with other Japanese promotion literally a week after this. So people are like, ah, see.
Oh, so we're just being petty.
That has no bearing on anything at this point. But yeah, we'll see what happens. It's looking like we're gonna be saying sayonara to Jay White again. We'll see.
He has to get an American send off though, so I understand. Next up, we got a filthy rules fight. That means it's no DQ and there's gonna be no ring ropes. It's Homicide versus Filthy Tom Lawler. That sounded weird. Lawler.
It's a filthy rules fight. You're going against the leader of Team Filthy. I think I'd be foolish to bet against Tom Lawler. You know?
I think you would be too. But
Homicide's a legend.
We've been wrong before.
That's another legend on this card. Another Impact legend. Yeah, so. Homicide is not going to be an easy out. But it's filthy rules. It's hard for me to bet against the man the rules are even named after. Come on now.
Bruh. All right.
The filthy man is going to win.
Next up, we got a New Japan Pro Wrestling World Television Championship match. We've got Zack Sabre Jr. on his second title defense versus Clark Connors.
And I love that because Clark Connors made a nice little video and everything, basically calling out Zack and setting this up, I think. It'll be an exciting moment. It's kind of like the Ren Narita match at Wrestle Kingdom, where Zach kind of got a chance to fight a younger guy and give him a chance to, you know, to showcase what he can do in that 15-minute format for the TV title. So that's going to be awesome. And I think it'll be great for Clark Connors to get that experience. Unlike his match with Ishii, I don't think he has to worry about getting his freaking head knocked off. But, hey, it's a possibility. Maybe he does. Clark Connors is not going to hold back. So I can't wait to see how it turned out. But most likely, I think we will. He will still be TV champion after this. But, yeah, Zach, I'm down for a Zach match anytime. It doesn't really matter who he's fighting.
I agree. Now it's time for part one of the double main event. We've got 60 minutes on the time limit. The IWGP Women's Championship, Kairi versus Mercedes Moné.
That's what I love to hear. The 60-minute time limit sounds like they're going to have a big chunk of time. And I really hope that that's the case. They built this card around them. I seen some people saying they wish they go last. I really doubt with Okada on the card anyone else is going last. If that is the case, if they did something special like that for Mercedes and for Kairi in this spot, because again, this card was built off of their match pretty much. They didn't fill out the rest of this card until the last few weeks. So this match was set from January 4th. So
yeah.
Yeah, I think this match definitely can deserve going last. It's gonna be special. You know, even if you've seen Sasha or seen Mercedes and Kairi do this in the past, it's just going to be even better under these circumstances in this spot in America. The crowd is going to be losing their shit because they're going to be witnessing history. So it's going to be special, and I'm not touching it. I'm not picking this. Are you crazy? Part of me feel like maybe I should be smart, because I know. See, they opened the curtain. And they said that maybe Kairi wasn't even going to originally win this. It was possibly supposed to be for Mayu Iwatani, who, if you know, you know. That's pretty much their ace. She's been a superstar in Stardom for a long time. But because of contract situations and et cetera, they went with Kairi instead of Mayu Iwatani. And, you know, so maybe this whole Kairi thing has been an impromptu. You know, she's a big enough star, and her and Mercedes have history. But also, because of that history, it makes me feel like maybe they don't know what they're talking about, and this was always the plan. We're always meant to get Kairi versus Mercedes. So I don't know necessarily where to even go. I'm not touching it. I'm not even going to try to predict it. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy it just like everyone else should. The internet is going to lose their mind. The Sasha / Mercedes stands are going to go insane like they do every time something is posted or every time she does anything. So just get ready for that, Twitter or socials. And, yeah, man, this is going to be great. Enjoy this. This is history. This is beautiful stuff. I think we're going to be seeing viewers from all over the world for this match. I think that's just going to be fantastic. So I can't wait to hear or I can't wait not only to see what happened, but I can't wait to hear the just pretty much the outbreak, the support, the non-support, because I know people are going to be hating too. I just ready for it because this is one of the biggest matches of the year already. It's been set in stone for a while. I don't think you get the anticipation much higher. They haven't even touched. I don't think they've done a press conference or anything that I know of, like, facing each other. So it's just like they just show you how big of stars they are that they don't even have to do anything else. We just announced the match. It's going to happen, and everyone is ready to tune in.
I agree. I'm excited for this. Can't wait to watch it. Last up, the second half of the double main event, 60-minute time limit, the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship match. We've got Kazuchika Okada versus Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Yeah, and this is the one where I say I'm betting against a legend. But like I said, they're both legends at this point. This is a legendary feud. Anyone who knows, just like I just mentioned they were in Osaka. And like Tanahashi said, it's been about 10 or 11 years since Okada, you know, surprised him, gave him the rainmaker shock, as they call it. But honestly, you know, he said he's going to try to give Okada a shock of his own. And I love it. That's honestly, they can always pick up where they left off. That's just how good or how well-renowned their feud is. They have great chemistry together. So I'm expecting it to be another fun Okada versus Tanahashi matchup. But I'm definitely picking the rainmaker. You know, he has pressing matters that he don't seem to be bothered by, but he has other things going on with multiple people. And even though I do think he's taking it one match at a time, and he's definitely not going to take Tanahashi lightly, I still think he's going to be just a little bit too strong for the ace. So, yeah, that's what I'm probably going to see happening. But it's still special, special stuff that's going to happen in Battle in the Valley, a big card for New Japan.
Ooh, okay. It's exciting, especially that since it's on, like, the same day as Elimination Chamber. I can't wait. I think
it's going to be in the daytime, too.
It might be.
Like, I could have swore the time I saw for us would be, like, 11 a.m., 12, something like that. I could have swore it was something.
Oh, no, it's
like
not going to be in the daytime.
It's not?
It's going to be later? It's 7 p.m. California time. So that's like, it's nighttime. Oh, never mind. For us. That's 9.
That's later.
That's 9 for us.
What did I see
then? That's after.
Don't
the
worry
chamber.
About that then. That's fine then. That works. It's later. That works. Anyway.
Next up, we're going to be predicting WWE Elimination Chamber. These matches are in no particular order. I will be keeping track of who selects whom.
Yeah. I'm going to try to be quicker here because New Japan took up 40 minutes of the show.
I think. But, let's do this. First up, we got Judgment Day, Finn and Rhea versus Beth and Edge. Who you got?
So, this is a tough one, honestly. I was like, no, there's no way Rhea's going to lose this close to the thing. But part of me is also like, but I kind of want them to get this Edge and Beth stuff over.
Yes.
Edge has literally been beefing with Judgment Day for a long time.
Over a year.
And I know he has acting commitments and other stuff that's probably been taking him away from TV consistently. So, I'm going with Edge and Beth just to get this out of the way for now, even though I still can see Finn or something. I still can see Edge getting some type of Judgment Day involved type of situation for WrestleMania. I'm not sure what it's going to be, but it's probably still going to be something like that. But I don't know. It's hard for me to bet against them together in this situation. I say Finn probably take the pin.
I agree. I'm choosing Beth and Edge mostly because Beth, not really that much because Edge. It's like her re-debut. She looks good. She looks like she has some gas in the tank, and I'm very favorable toward Beth. I've always loved Beth.
I say do a double finish spot, but Rhea don't get pinned. Because again, I'm still trying to protect her here because she's going against Charlotte.
I'm not saying Beth pick up the victory against Rhea. I'm saying that this may be a catalyst for us to see more Beth in the company.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'd like to see at least. Next match we've got Bobby Lashley versus Brock Lesnar.
Again, one of the toughest matches to kind of predict for me. I didn't really know which way it was gonna go. Old school booking based on how that last segment on Raw went. Make me say Brock is going to win because he got left laid out. You know what I mean?
Don't take my pick strategy.
He got left laid out. So that's probably the traditional way to go. But I say, and maybe I'm just thinking about this wrong, but I say, because I don't necessarily know what Brock is going to be doing at WrestleMania, but if Brock wins here, it feels like it's over. It feels like it's over. Now maybe Brock can win, and then maybe after you still can do what I want to do, and then they still can continue it on that way. So if that's what happens, that's what happens. You see, I'm trying to put out all my cards on a match that I'm possibly going to get wrong. But I say Bobby Lashley is going to win, and the Hurt Business is going to reform by taking out Brock Lesnar, or, you know, hurting him. Not necessarily hurting him, but at least helping Bobby get the win. And then that'll lead us to a WrestleMania situation. I don't necessarily know. I doubt it'll probably be a Hurt Business involved situation, but it'll be something to where maybe we get like a cage, or maybe we get something big at WrestleMania for Brock and Bobby to finish this out in. Maybe a fight pit, like they like to do with They both got MMA, so why not do a fight pit type of thing? But I could be just all fantasy booking in my head, but that's what I'm thinking.
All right, I'm going to pick Brock Lesnar mostly because this is my rationale. Bobby's up on Brock as far as like wins. And upper challenges.
Eliminating the Royal Rumble does not count.
It does count.
That's not a win,
Brock got ticked off. So I think you give it to Brock. Her Business can indeed reform by jumping Brock after the match. And again, it can also lead into the fight pit. But I think Brock needs this win a little bit more than Bobby, because I ultimately see Bobby being the one that goes over as the feud ends, because Brock has been at the top for a while. And now we've been waiting for this Brock and Bobby feud for years. I feel like Bobby should be the one that goes over at the end, and I just don't think this is the end. That's my take on it. Next up, we got the Women's Chamber. We got Asuka, Liv Morgan, Raquel Rodriguez, Nikki Cross, Natalya, and Carmella.
So, it's a lot of stories in here where it'd be nice. Like, Liv Morgan, it'd be nice. Cause we all like Liv, you know, and she's worked hard. But I think even Raquel, even anyone else you could think of, except the one I'm picking, would be nice. But it's just only one person so far that even remotely feels like she can be on Bianca level to me, and that's Asuka, especially with the rebrand, the new character, the way she just took out everyone in that Elimination Chamber six women's tag match. She basically just beat up everybody. It's just like, all right, well, let's have that happen in the chamber. Asuka eliminates everyone. Dominantly. Missed, submissions, strikes, whatever. So, yeah, that's the way I book it. Make this Asuka feel different than from the other Asuka by making her completely, like, a monster and dominant.
I agree. I'm picking Asuka, but mostly because there's no heels in this match, and other than Carmella, I guess. And unless they're going to turn Bianca heel.
No, they turn to Asuka.
For Mania, it doesn't make sense for any of the other people in this match to turn heel.
Because you still got the unhinged story you can go with Asuka. You just go with this new version of Asuka. It's not like the one who was teaming up with Bianca earlier this year.
I agree, and she's not. We can see that. But I don't think Liv will turn. I don't think Raquel. I don't see anybody else turning heel or being taken. And Nikki got some issues with what's her name?
Candice LeRae.
Candice. Yeah. I see her face, but I did not see her name. I'm so sorry, Candice. She's got some issues with Candice to resolve, so I definitely don't think I see Nikki in that place. Definitely.
And Nikki don't have the history. If this was Rhea as a champion, then maybe I'd be like, yeah, you can go somewhere with a crazy Nikki Cross type of story, but no.
But no, I agree. We got Asuka for that one. Next up, for the United States Championship, the Men's Elimination Chamber, we've got Austin Theory, Seth Rollins, Johnny Gargano, Bronson Reed, Damian Priest, and Montez Ford.
So, again, would I love to see Montez Ford walk out of his damn champion? You damn right. I guarantee you he's probably going to do a frog splash off the pod. Probably going to do something absolutely insane off the top of the pod or something. Or something crazy in general, because he's an awesome athlete. But I don't see anyone walking out of here with this belt except Austin Theory. I've gotten to the point to where I kind of like what he's doing. Everything is the conviction in his new character that I really like. He just seems like he's really, really on the same page with what he's trying to portray as a champion, as a character. And I really like what he's doing. I do understand that WrestleMania is coming up, so maybe you do give it to another thing. Seth Rollins is going to get screwed. I don't know if Logan Paul is going to make his way in there. I don't know if his music is going to play. Something's going to happen because he just they won't leave Logan Paul away alone with from Seth. So, obviously, he won't win whether it has anything to do with Logan or not. I just don't think he will win. Again, everyone else, Priest, be awesome, but I don't think you go from Theory to Priest, you know, with the heel type of thing. Who else in here is a face?
Johnny Gargano.
Johnny Gargano, again, nice, but and he actually has history with Theory.
He does.
So you actually can play into it, but I again, out of to come out of nowhere when you basically just been managing Dexter Lumis and just win this title here, I don't necessarily see it happening that way. But, you know, I could be completely wrong and off base here, but I think I'm going to stick with Theory.
You know, this is hard for me because I want to pick Seth because I feel like his match with Logan needs to be about something. And so far, Logan has fought for the U.S. The Undisputed title. So I'm like, why not fight for the U.S. title too?
Yeah.
And again, I know some people are saying that they see Theory at Mania against John Cena. But there's no been...
You don't need a belt for that.
I know. There's been no seeds planted. So since I'm not 100% confident in Seth Rollins winning this, I'm going to have to go with you and say Theory retains. Because like you said, Bronson Reed got no chance. Montez, he good for a good spot. But, you know, right now it's not time to push him in solo. Damian is not winning anything. I'm just going to leave. Damian is not winning anything. If he ever wins something, I would be surprised. But right now, he got the whole I do cocaine thing going on with the eyeliner.
I got to put this on YouTube, man. Like, what is wrong with you?
I'm sorry.
You always forget that I'm trying to get my predictions on YouTube.
It's what is it called? Lord. Like, it's not goth. Alternative. Alternative with the chains, BDSM club type thing. And
that's just Judgment Day's vibe, okay?
I know. And whatever Finn has going on, Finn don't fit in that aesthetic.
You got to use different words. You can't be that overt. When we go to YouTube, you got to stick like Booger Sugar and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, just bleep it out. We're fine.
You really overestimate my editing.
You need practice. We're fine. So, again, in short, Johnny needs to get something else going in order for me to believe in him.
To believe, yeah. It just feels out of nowhere if he just wins it now.
So, a theory is going to retain. Last match of the night, one that we've all been rooting for, the one that this man woke up out of his bed, rolled over, and filmed a TikTok for the Undisputed Universal Championship. Roman Reigns versus Sami Zayn in Montreal, Canada.
So what when I kind of earlier in the show when I kind of was off track and I had to ask you about the Loser Leaves Japan match that you set up and all of that, it was because I was reading that, you know, when the plan seemed to be for a while now, Sammy, because they knew they were in Montreal, the plan seemed to be for a while now. This is what people are saying. Who knows what's actually true? You know how these things go when it comes to rumors around here. So they're saying that the plan was the original thing that people have already kind of thrown out there. You know, they go out there, they have a great match, and Jay costs them. But the ratings have been so crazy. Like, when Jay Uso showed up in the tag match, they saw a ratings bump. When Sami Zayn was on TV with Cody, and every time they kind of used Sami, even I guess last week on SmackDown, Sami Zayn segment, it's just been blowing people out of the water, the ratings. Like I said, they had a real high rating during the SmackDown segment with Sami last week, at least if I remember hearing about. So, again, he's really being a needle mover to kind of steal something from Roman. Sami is being a needle mover here. So it really is making them consider maybe other alternatives. So with that being said, they could just be trying to throw us off their very obvious finish.
Yeah.
Scent. They could be trying to throw us off their scent. Or, you know, who knows? They could be. Now, again, everything I'm saying does not mean I think Roman's going to lose. I'm just saying maybe Jey Uso don't cost him. And then we still have this uncertainty about Jey, you know, going for. Because, again, Jey has every reason to still kind of resent Roman, whether we all know that.
Yes.
So to kind of just fall back in line, other than just for blood. Like I need a reason, other than just, you know, we're blood.
Yes.
Or, you know, a lot of people need a reason. So, but again, that's good enough. So I will accept we're blood and that's fine. But I'm just saying that, you know, some people, because of how well they've told this story, is just waiting for how are they going to, you know, bring this all together. And that's just, again, even people who hate this company, people who don't want to have nothing to do with WWE, watch the Bloodline segments. Because they, like I said, they feel like this is a once in a lifetime type of story. WWE usually don't write stuff like this. So they say that's why we're kind of overblowing it and all that. But if you've been here this entire ride, like I remember when we were doing the SmackDown and Raw reviews. Oh, every time we used to review SmackDown, what we used to always marvel at? The way they wrote Roman Reigns' parts. The story for Roman's, his story, just always felt way more important than everyone else's story, just from the way they structured it. And it's only gotten more and more that way, you know? So, again, nobody really knows, but I'm sorry, I definitely had a lot to say there, but just to come back and tell you the obvious, Roman's going to win, right? I don't think Roman is going to lose. I haven't entertained it yet. It is Montreal. So, you know,
those finishes are going to be good.
The false finishes are going to be insane. And then if Sammy, even the one time he gets that 2.9 and he comes, or he hits the Huluva kick, the way that place is going to blow up, you know, and then just be very, very devastated when Roman kicks out like he does all the time, you know, it's just going to be, it's going to be a great ride. I know that. It's going to be a very, very great ride. I don't know, man. I went against Drew in his hometown, so I have to go against Sammy. That's kind of been my logic. And,
you were right about Drew in his hometown.
And Drew got screwed, so yeah. I expect Sammy to get screwed. But just how? Who is it? Will it be Jay? Will it be Sammy? I mean, not Sammy, Solo. Will it be Solo? Because, you know, he kind of looked uncertain, but we don't know if that uncertainty is because maybe that's what Roman was warning him. We're going to war. I don't know if Jay going to be here. I need you to do this, Solo. Or whatever. Who knows? Who knows?
You know what I want? Mm-hmm. My bad. You know what I want? I want them to do like a home segment for Roman and Jay. I need Roman to pull up on this man and go to like this chamber, whatever man cave they have, and we don't hear none of the conversation, but we see the confrontation. And like, it ain't even gotta be that long. Like, give me 30 seconds of him just showing up to Jay house. Like, we need to talk. And then leave it all ominous and shit and stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That would be like just a little bit of sugar on top. I'm picking Roman because, I mean, it's just Roman.
Yeah.
I don't pick
against him. How do you pick against him? That's what I'm saying. Even, do you not understand that even all this work they're doing? 900
days.
All this work they've been doing with Cody, I still, part of me is like, I'm probably going to pick Roman at WrestleMania.
Right.
Just to be safe.
Like,
part of me just feel like, no, it may be set up perfectly for Cody to do it, and I'm still like, nah, Roman's gonna win.
Somewhere in my heart, I'm like, too soon. I don't trust you.
We've been indoctrinated. Yeah, I trust Roman. You know what I'm saying? I saw 900, and I immediately was like, no, we gotta give him to 1,000.
You gotta keep it going.
Like, I saw somebody make a post like, if you're with me, tell me you're tired of please tell me you're tired, all tired of this Roman Reigns reign.
Oh.
And, people, they posted this church clip where they was like, when they were just basically saying, no, Lord, and stuff like that. We're not tired of this at all.
When did he win this title?
Like I said.
What pay-per-view was it?
I forgot which one it was, but to put it in perspective, it was during the pandemic era. It was screens everywhere. So, Braun Strowman just fought The Fiend in like a universal title match, I think, or something like that.
Lord.
And Roman just came and interrupted it because he had stroke back then. You know, he was booking the show. He still got stroke, but you know what I mean.
Do
whatever he wants, and he took the belt. So yeah. Let's
just make it to that pay per view.
I don't know exactly what show, but think about that. The Fiend was still around, guy.
Exactly.
So it's been a while.
All right. Well, that concludes our discussion on WWE's Elimination Chamber. It looks like the only match that is going to decide the fate of the lemon juice shot is Bobby versus Brock.
Yeah.
There's always one match where you're like, yeah, I don't agree with you. So we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll
probably post it on YouTube, though. You keep saying, first and foremost, it's going on YouTube.
Everywhere. We're influencers now.
No, we're not. Also, I wanted to say that this is a little long, but I don't care.
Doesn't matter. All right.
I'm going to post the 15, however 15, 16-minute clip it became.
Now, Now, to get into some serious, not seriousness, documentaries. When I was younger, I thought that, you know, they were there to inform me of things, you know, give me another side of them. But recently, I have been shown that that is not true. Documentaries, like all other forms of media, other forms of entertainment, are just that, entertainment, propaganda. They have a narrative that they want to push. And I'm not ashamed to say that I was enraged when I found this out.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to give it any pub and say the name of it, but just give an example of some of the stuff that made you not necessarily mad, but you know what I mean. Like,
yes.
Give the audience a little viewpoint to what you're talking about.
Right. I was watching a documentary with some older people who were trying to reverse heart disease, whatever. And this documentary was basically saying that, you know, evidence shows that if you eat plants and you eliminate meat products, that, you know, you can be successful in reversing heart disease. And the issues I had with this was that they used data from the World War II era to suggest that, you know, eating meat protein would lower your risk for cancer, lower your risk for heart disease. They literally said, you know, when Nazi Germany came in, they couldn't eat meat, so heart disease and cancer was lower in rates. And then as soon as the war ended, like the very next year, cancer and heart disease shot up because now they could get meat back into their diet. And me, being the logical person that I am, I'm like, that's stupid. People aren't dying from cancer, they're dying from war. People aren't going to the doctor because they're at war.
That's a good point.
Like, how can you use a obviously skewed statistic to try to say that, you know, these people didn't eat meat? No, they were at war. They were dying from a lot of other things that were not documented as heart disease or as a heart attack or as cancer because it was literally a war going on. Nobody had time for that. I think that was the main thing that annoyed me about this documentary. And documentaries like that, that's trying to persuade you to live a certain lifestyle over another one, or a documentary that's trying to sway you politically to feel this way, or even the documentaries about serial killers. Like, I refuse to watch a documentary about a serial killer where it's like, you know, he had friends, but we just didn't know that he was that type of person. And I'm like, why is this a documentary?
Or no, you know what? You just brought up a great one. And you know what? The documentary about the killer don't even bother me as much as the follow-ups. Like that stupid-ass doc I saw on Hulu that's talking about old dude who went viral, they brought his name back alive last year. I'm not even going to say it. No. But his friends. Why the hell are we interviewing the people who knew him or whatever growing up, or the people who was friends with him? Like, really?
Right. But really? Then the turn it around and you only get one interview with the family of the people that person killed.
Yeah, they don't follow the victim. That's too painful. We don't want to focus on that. Ain't nothing entertaining about that, I guess.
Like, that's
about hearing that. But it's very entertaining to tell you about how this bleeping murderer, oh man, he was, you know, I mean, honestly, he was normal. He was just like us. He was
such a good dude. Like, you know, obviously
we all,
not.
We all hung out. You know, we were, you know. He anyway.
But that's the point. Like,
and then, like you mentioned, it's plenty of, and I think that's the thing. You just got to understand that a lot of stuff that even if they're based in fact, or even if they use facts or use a tone that seems like they're just being informative, sometimes it's still, at the end of the day, it's entertainment. It's still trying to lead you to a conclusion. You know, I've watched murder conspiracy docs on, like, Biggie and Pac, where they basically was saying, I think this guy did it. And you know what? We're going to keep pointing it at this guy. And, you know, and I just want you, by the end of this doc, I guarantee you're going to think
that these guys did it,
right? Yeah. So it's just like, you know, yeah, they're based in fact. They're giving you information. They may be talking to people who are even close to these situations or seem like experts, you know. So
yes.
The thing is, too, about that, too, is just like you have to be able to decipher the truth from facts, not yourself, But, like, you just got to be able to understand when something is a fact, or, you know, something is just data, or when something is obviously opinion influenced. It's obviously been influenced by someone's opinion. And that's not always easy, but I think what we had to kind of, what we had the deep conversation about was just how growing up, we would watch the Discovery Channel, you would watch other BBC. Things. Yeah, BBC, and you would see these type of docs, and you would think, oh, okay, this is what a doc is about. You know, they're just trying to teach you and give you background information on the things you're seeing here and all that. But you got to understand that that's not necessarily all, that's not all of the documentary, you know, where I use, as a matter of fact, a great example, I don't think, this is what I'm saying, you shouldn't expect, if you're watching an E! True Hollywood Story type of documentary, you got to expect that you're going to get, you know, a viewpoint of, it depends on what the true story they're trying to tell. You got to keep that in mind. Yes. They're going to give you facts, but they're still trying, they're telling you in the title, it's a true Hollywood story. So we are trying to lead you to a conclusion. You know, and that's something that, you know, if you're trying to just get information or get more information on the topic, when a doc is trying to lead you somewhere, that's something that you always kind of have to be mindful of.
I agree. But that's kind of what we went in deep thought of last week, and I wanted to share that with the pod, bring it in. And this series that we just started is kind of interesting. We'll see how it progresses in time. Next up, we got a new segment that we want to try based solely on the fact that I saw a TikTok and I laughed my behind off because of the sheer absurdity. So if you were in a pinch and you had to choose between two things, it can be world related, it could be wrestling related, it could be anything that you desire.
I'm going to add one at the end here. So
okay.
I just came up one.
It can be anything that you desire it to be. But you had to choose, and then you had to live out those consequences. So the first one was if you had to choose between paying your water bill and paying your light bill, your electric bill, which one would you buy, or which one would you spend your money on?
So, again, like you said, it's a tough situation. I think we both eventually came to the conclusion about that maybe the power is the way to go.
Yes, electric is more important.
Power is the way to go there. Like you said, if you don't have power and you just got water and you're able to bathe, you're able to do all those things, but you don't even have power, so you may not. If you're like us and you live in these apartments with central air, you don't have air or heat.
You don't.
You can't cook because we have electric stoves and stuff now. So again, what's the point of your house? You just got running water. Yeah, you get to bathe every day, but that's literally about it.
But then you can work around not having water.
You have, way more flexibility about work. Even if you have to go to a gas station, restroom or something like a trucker, whatever you need to do to wash up, or, you know, if you work at a place where you have an office space and all of that, and a clear restroom where you possibly can do your business at work, that's even better than things. So, like I said, other circumstances could determine this, but if you had to choose, I think keeping the power on would be the best way. Because you even mentioned that if you had enough money left over, you can go to a store, buy cases of water or something, boil the water. So it's just so many. You got so many more options. So the power is definitely one.
Power is definitely more important.
That we pay. Yeah.
Next one is if you had to pay your phone bill, your phone service bill, or put gas in your car.
And again, that this is a tough one, especially in this world.
Yeah.
In the world we live in now. You know, do you really want to be without a cell phone? And then also, you know, the same thing, vice versa. Now, depending on where you live, that's another thing that kind of helps you. If you live in one of these walking towns, who gives a, you know, I don't care about my car.
That's true. You can ride a bike anywhere.
I'm going to put my phone. Yeah, I'm going to hop on my bike, whatever. You know, high city, if you have good public transportation in your city, you know what I mean? Maybe it doesn't matter to you. But if you live in places like us, these more rural type areas, or if you live in Texas.
Oh, Texas.
You know, Texas ain't really a place for public transportation. They want you to drive everywhere.
Terrible.
They don't want you to walk anywhere. Exactly. So, in a place like that, it might be more efficient. It might be better for you so you can at least still go to work and do everything you need to do on a daily basis. It might be better to, you know, go a month or two or whatever without your phone.
Or if you live in like a big city where you have public transportation options, like a train, a subway, or a bus or something like that, it might be cheaper to do that than put gas in your car. Like a bus, a bus fare maybe like $2-3 maybe.
Yeah. So I'm going paying my phone service. I've been carless, so.
So that was easy for you.
Yeah, it's a little easier for me. I've been carless, so.
And again, in this world, you need your phone.
And when I had my vehicle.
Like, not vehicle.
When I had one, right? Think about it. I would wait to the last minute sometime to fill it up. So.
And you never filled it up full. You always filled it to half a tank. It's like, bro.
$15 at a time.
That's so useless.
I wasn't going anywhere, man.
But yeah, what's your either or?
So last one, just to give us a little wrestling one to go off on, to kind of relate it to what we have going on. If you let's say in this hypothetical situation, we're both wrestlers, you know, and this is they just giving us a choice of what stipulation we would like to play, you know, what match do we like to play out our next title defense?
Okay.
Or not even a title defense, just with our next match.
Okay.
Would you rather step inside of War Games?
Oh.
You have teammates on your side, you know, so it's plus there. But it's a long match. You can get turned on. A lot of things can go awry. Or would you rather, to be on the point, would you rather fight for yourself in an Elimination Chamber pod? You know, less people.
Okay, no. But
one of them is way more,
I'm picking the chamber.
One of them is way more hazardous, so you're still picking the chamber.
I'm picking the chamber because I don't even have to be pinned in War Games to lose.
It's true. You don't.
So I could be sitting here, and then you got to wait for them people to come in. I can be sitting here getting my ass whooped, and the match ain't even started yet because I'm number one. I'm the first one. You're one of the first ones,
right. And you can be like Dakota Kai, who basically had to take everybody's every bump possible.
Give me the chamber.
She might still be banged up from freaking War Game. I don't like how easy you came to that conclusion, but I actually have to agree with you. I thought maybe I could trick you into going War Game because you have teammates and you have you have something other people to rely on, and it's not the thing is about Elimination Chamber. The chamber itself is so dangerous, though.
It is
the floor out on the outside, the pod, and all of that other stuff. But it's been enough of them. I've seen enough that you can't avoid those things. And like you said, it's you're betting on yourself, man. At the end of the day, whether you if you lose, you lost.
Exactly.
You know, at least like in War Games, if you lose, you may not have anything to do with it. You know. So yeah, I like that. Like I said, that'll be a great segment to try to continue. We'll try to come up with two or three of them every week. And hell, we'll even start doing, we probably could change it from would you rather or to like who, like just like either or in this situation. So I may say one wrestler versus another.
And it's kind of like those music, save one, drop one.
Yeah, kind of like that too.
So
I like that too.
We may
even do that too with music one day or whatever. So who knows? So keep, stay tuned, guys. Thank you guys for, supporting us. If you're listening, an hour and 15 minutes in. You're awesome. Thank you for continuing to support. Thank you for listening or thinking we're interesting enough that you could still be hearing us out. If you're traveling on the road, you're on a plane, whatever you're doing, thank you for spending your time with the Mind of Monty podcast. Anything else you want to do?
A couple things. One, happy birthday, Hobie. Watch J-Hope in the Box on Disney+. He went live like I knew he would as soon as we turned on the damn microphone to start this podcast. So I'm a little upset about that. Anyways, next up, we got a lot in store for you.
She can't understand Korean, y'all, but she be worried about
I understand
live.
Enough. Hajima.
Okay, all right, go.
Next up, next week, we will be traveling to Los Angeles/Anaheim, California. So possible delay in the podcast release. We'll let you know. We'll let you know on the socials what the schedule shall be.
Yeah, it's probably gonna change on the fly. It depends on how we feel after traveling, and you know how it goes. It's gonna be a very, very fresh experience for both of us. We're just gonna try to make it through, get back to you guys, and definitely we'll let you know when it's time to record.
I agree. Then keep a lookout for YouTube. check your Twitter, check your TikToks, all of the social media platforms that you know we are on for the loser of the Elimination Chamber prediction situation. They will be taking a shot of straight lemon juice. And the lemon juice is old, so I don't even know if it's safe to do so. But we're going to do it. We're going to record it. Whoever is the loser.
If you lose, then you won't do it, most likely.
What? I'm going to just get fresh lemon juice. I'll just lie and say it's lemon juice.
Yeah, we'll do something else for you.
We'll see. But anyway.
Can't take risk with your insides right now.
I'm fine.
What was that?
It was a Korean thing. Don't worry about it. Then we're going to review the Elimination Chamber. And our next serious topic is strictly wrestling. Because wrestlers be liars. We may turn that into a YouTube video also. But wrestlers be liars. But that's it. Follow us on TikTok at Monty's Universe. Follow us on Twitter at MindMontyPod. And I cannot wait till the next show.
All right, you guys. Sayonara. Adios.
Annyeong.
Au revoir.